It was actually a friend of mine who contacted me a year after living in Shanghai, who said, "You better be writing a Shanghai book." So I thought, "Oh, I have those stories in my brain already. I can put those down on paper."
Do you feel when you're in Shanghai that you could be pretty much anywhere that's a major city?
No. I think the difference is when to get a view of those crazy, tall, ridiculous skyscrapers, you have to be on the street where you're seeing old lane houses. You're seeing the old lane houses being ripped down. So the kind of the disparity between the old and the new is getting, farther and farther apart on the street. You can feel that you're in Shanghai. The energy never changes.
Is it a place then, from what you say, that you have to see pretty soon because all the old bits could just be ripped out and redeveloped?
Yeah, if you're going, I would go now.
Right now.
Right now, just pack up real quick. There's a lot of beautiful stuff that's going away, which is a little sad. But the other part of it, and the part that's kind of exciting, I don't like to just look backward and think, well, this beautiful stuff is disappearing. The new stuff is crazy. It's a real, it's so big, and it's such a sight. They're really going for it over there, just building as much as possible. So that's a whole other, that's a whole other way to see the city. And even if you don't go right now, you'll get your money's worth in a couple of years.
So they're building in a sort of creative architectural way rather than, I suppose, what we assume communist countries might do and just build in a functional way.
There's definitely the communist architecture that's everywhere, and the giant housing blocks that go on for miles and miles. But yeah, these new ones, the new tower they have there is just insane to look at. It doesn't you see it standing next to these other gigantic skyscrapers, bigger than any building I've ever been in, and it's so much taller. So there, it's more of a in their creativity. There's also the built-in, we have to make the biggest one of these, which I really appreciate. And it's really fun to go up in them and be terrified.
Is there quite a big, a volume of tourists going to the city? And if so, what do they go to? What's on the tourist map?
There's all kinds of temples, there's all kinds of buildings, areas of the city to go to. I think what's better about Shanghai is that you can just walk around and just absorb the energy of the place, and that's enough tourism. For me, at least, just eating off this, eating street food, taking turns down roads that you have no idea where they go. It's a very safe place, and that's something you can do. That's what I recommend to people. I was just like, yeah, just go get lost for a couple hours and see what happens. You're gonna see some things that blow your mind, and you're gonna eat some really incredible little pieces of food.
But before we get into that, I mean, in terms of the landmarks, San Francisco's got the Golden Gate, you've got the Eiffel Tower in Paris. What are the things that people would want to see in Shanghai?
The main draw is the Bund. The Bund is kind of the Huangpu River does a little jog in the middle of the city, and there are a couple places that they call the Bund, which is just the shoreline there. I believe it was named by the Germans when they were hanging out in the city. That's where Europeans built their banking centers before communism took over. And there's beautiful architecture. There's a on the Bund, there's a beautiful walkway that you can take that has views. It's right on the river. There's views of both sides of the river. Well, the French Concession is it's older, and it feels more European almost. Tree-lined streets. There's lots of people out and about It's less hectic than the rest of the city. Nice coffee shops, that kind of a thing. Big. That's where the expat community kind of hangs out. And it's just it's just a plain nice place to be.
Let's talk then about the street food that you touched on a few moments ago.
Oh, sure.
Because I don't know whether it's an urban myth or not, but it's pretty much understood here that Chinese people sometimes eat things that we wouldn't necessarily want to eat. So, right. do you have to be a bit careful about what you buy?
Well, I have two kind of chapters in the book where I talk about street food. One of them is called Eat Dangerously, and that's just something people, you know, we're not used to eating what the people in China are eating. That makes total sense. So they have they're just like iron stomachs, which is a great, just, I wish I could be, you know, brought up with their stomachs. You are, if you go to Shanghai, you're probably going to get, if you want to eat the food on the street, you're probably going to get food poisoning. And it's something I think you should accept now before you go and just prepare yourself, because if you show up and you're afraid to eat, you're afraid to try new things, that's going to be not so fun a time. It's kind of a Russian roulette thing. So just kind of go for it and you'll feel bad for a day and then you'll get over it. but I think that the thing that, you know, nothing was so shocking to me. The only thing that was that really didn't agree with me was stinky tofu, and that's a fermented tofu that's served on the street. And if you'll know when you're near it, because you'll smell it if you're within 100 yards.
Are there differences in things like, well, I suppose, hygiene standards that took a bit of getting used to? Again, I've heard from people saying that things aren't necessarily what they'd expect to find at home.
Yeah, everything takes getting used to. Every single thing. It's a challenge, and it's a good challenge. You know, this is what I thought when I went over there, and you kind of get your culture shock and you think, oh man, I don't know if I can do this. This is hard. But then you realize China has most of the people. They have the highest percentage of human beings, and this is how they live. And it's even trying to understand that a little bit is important, I think. It was definitely important for me. And a kind of a cool way to think about life, a whole new perspective on it. So that was valuable.
How much of a challenge is it, well, being understood and just doing everyday things? I mean, how widely spoken is English? Because you won't have many clues from just reading signs, will you? It's not like Spanish or French where you can guess.
Right. It's so funny. I went to Spain after China, and I thought, whoa, this is... Spanish is so easy. This is what a wonderful language. No, it's English is not that widely spoken. It does happen more often than you'd think, especially in the French concession. There's a lot of English spoken there. You really have to get. I got around. I learned just a little bit of Chinese, of Mandarin. But you do a lot of pointing. And you hope for the best. That's really what it comes down to.
Are there any cultural no-nos?
The one thing that I did once made some people angry was I left my chopsticks sticking up in a bowl of rice, and that is has something to do with death. I don't know. I think it's. I did it and went to the restroom, came back, and everybody was angry at me. And that's all I remember. So don't do that.
But see, that's quite disconcerting, isn't it? If everybody's angry at you and they're angry at you in a foreign language you don't understand.
Yep, you just kind of roll with it, smile, nod, try to sink into your chair a little bit.
Well, you didn't die, obviously, so there's nothing in the chopsticks thing, is there? There can't be.
That's right.
getting around, how would you get around the city? I mean, is it very congested? Is it a bad idea to try and rent a car and drive?
Oh, no. I don't think you'd be able to drive with a outside license. Let me think about it. I don't think you can, but you might be able to get a license when you're in there. I'm not sure. However, the public transportation system is phenomenal. The trains run like clockwork. They're incredibly clean. There's plentiful cell service, so you'll be able to map where you're going. And the taxis are very cheap. And even though it's kind of like getting onto a roller coaster, and it's going to be a wild ride, they will get you where you want to go very quickly for very little money. And you'll be able to find an app that where you can search the name of the place where you want to go, and they'll give it back to you in Chinese that you can just kind of give to the driver, and they can read it from there.
Yeah, talking about sort of connectivity and maybe just keeping in touch with home, were you able to use things like, well, I don't know, Facebook or Skype from China?
No, I don't know if Skype was Facebook is not allowed. Google is not allowed. Skype, maybe, I'm not sure. But they have, you know, there are workarounds for everything. There are things called VPNs, services you can subscribe to, where it'll basically just say that it'll bounce your connection through another country. So your connection can be at home while you're in China. And then you can, you know, use your Gmail or your Facebook as usual, but you know, Chinese internet is not the fastest thing in the world, so it might take you a bit.
Did you ever feel that you might get a knock at the door when you were doing things like that?
For the first couple weeks, and then you just kind of learn to not worry about it. I'm not doing any, you know, I'm not trying to take down the government, so I'm just trying to email my mom.
So when it comes to just living there, everyday things like grocery shopping, if you're not going to have street food, if you're just going to go out for a meal, say at a Western type place, I mean, is it comparatively cheaper?
I think it depends on where you go. I think is a good rule of thumb. There are many very cheap things in China, which is very exciting when you're brand new. You can go, oh, I get the street pancake on my block for the equivalent of 20 cents or something like that. But then you get into the nicer, you get into restaurants and things, and they cost more. I don't know how much more, but you're spending, you know, Chinese money, you're spending RMB, so it kind of feels fun. You're just like, oh, there's all these colors, and these are, you know, I'm happy to give over these color bubbles. So you don't really, it's more expensive, hard to notice with the currency.
When you think of your time there, when you sort of think back about what you've loved there, what comes into your mind?
People. It's you know what? It's so funny. It feels like a dream now. I think it was a month before I moved to China, I didn't know I was going to move to China. And it just kind of came out of the blue. And then it was, you know, I was supposed to be there for 2 months, actually. I was just there for a freelance job, and it turned into almost 2 years. So it's, you know, it's kind of and then you come back and all your friends are like, oh yeah, where'd you go? Everything's the same here. And you have had this crazy experience. That's what I miss most about China. Number one is the people. And number two is life is a little less interesting where you're from, where I'm from in America. It's just, if when you're in China, you really feel like you're doing something. You're really taking a chance. And And that's important. And it, you know, it's an adventure. So I guess I miss a little bit of the adventure.
Well, you can read more about the adventure in the book, This is Shanghai by Alexander Barrett. Alex, thanks for sharing some insights into Shanghai with us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much.